From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Sunday's Super Bowl game was watched by millions of Americans, but overall, the game had an eight-year record low viewership. The National Football League has been a political flashpoint for a while, and Sunday's game was seen as almost a proxy for the political mood of the nation. The Philadelphia Eagles won the game, and some of their players are refusing to visit Donald Trump in the White House. The losing team's quarterback, Tom Brady, is a prominent Trump supporter. During the much-watched halftime show, pop star Pink sang a sugary version of the national anthem, while some Eagles players stood raising their fists. Justin Timberlake also sang. His last Super Bowl performance was marked by his role in the so-called wardrobe malfunction with Janet Jackson. Super Bowl ads were significantly less political than last year's, but a commercial that used an MLK speech to sell trucks has been roundly condemned. We turn to Stephanie Abraham, writer and media critic. She helped to found the feminist magazine Makeshift. She was a founding editor of the magazine Loudmouth. Her works have been published in a number of outlets, including McSweeney's, Al Jazeera, Mizna, and Bitch magazine. And she's the pop culture correspondent and film critic for our program. Welcome to the program, Stephanie.
Thanks, Sonali. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the game itself. I have to confess, I approached this entire story as an outsider. I didn't watch the game. I don't usually watch the game. I don't follow football. But from what I understand, the Philadelphia team beat the New England team, the New England Patriots. And that was seen as a proxy. You know, and we see this sort of in World Cup soccer, where when a poor team beats a rich country's team, it's seen as a somehow emotional win and some kind of a cathartic moment for the people watching. Was that a little bit how it turned out on Sunday, with Trump critics feeling somewhat vindicated because the Eagles won?
Yeah, I think there's definitely that. The Patriots were down most of the game, which was really enjoyable for a big portion of the nation. Patriots is kind of the team to hate. It doesn't help that a few years ago, they were accused of cheating in the Super Bowl by deflating the ball. And, you know, it's some people say they did and some people say they didn't. What is for sure is that they did have to pay fines for it. So anyway, it was definitely a battle of an underdog versus the pretty boy, and the underdog won. So many people were ecstatic about that. And Trump actually was particularly quiet, which I thought was surprising. People expected him to be, you know, supporting his quarterback. As you just said, they seem to be chums. To my knowledge, he didn't tweet at all yesterday.
Right. He on Sunday did not. It was even reported that he basically said, I better not get involved. And of course, he has made a huge issue of the actions by some players at the NFL in games over this past year, kneeling down for the national anthem rather than standing up for it. A trend begun by Colin Kaepernick, who was protesting police brutality. What took place on Sunday around the national anthem, which was sung by Pink?
Well, Pink, I mean, in the mainstream media, what they're reporting is she had the flu. So right before she began singing, it looks like she spit out a piece of gum, but it was actually a throat lozenge. So that's made national headlines.
Oh my gosh.
But they didn't show anything about people taking a knee. I heard in your intro that some players raised an arm or their hand in solidarity, and none of that was shown, of course. So
right, we have a few images of Eagles players raising their fists in the air. But so you're saying that during the actual game, the cameras didn't pan to them?
Was not on NBC at all.
Interesting. And were you surprised by that? Have Eagles players in past games taken a knee?
You know, I'm not sure about those statistics, but what I do know is that the hashtag take a knee is still something that's really out there. And Colin Kaepernick, who started this, was let go, and he still has not been hired back. He's a free agent. You know, it was said that Jay-Z was approached. CNN reported that Jay-Z was approached to do the Super Bowl halftime show, and he refused to until Colin gets a job. So there is kind of this protest going on behalf of him, of like, you can't just target the players who actually do take a knee and say, you know, Black Lives Matter and kind of support that that movement. You know, Trump actually spoke to the NFL head honchos and said, "You need to hire any. I mean, you need to fire any player who takes a knee," and they refused to do that.
Let's talk about the fact that the game itself lost viewership. The NFL has been losing ratings. The reasons behind that are hotly contested. Some argue that people are just kind of tired of seeing a game that has been proven to cause severe brain injuries in players. Others are trying to make the case that it's the players who are taking a knee during the anthem that's turning off viewers. Any idea from your perspective of whether the viewership had a significance or the loss of viewership meant anything on Sunday?
I do think take a knee protest has influenced people. There were a lot of folks tweeting about that they weren't watching, that they were doing other things. And I think that's a good sign. One of the reasons they justify spending $5 million for a 30-second commercial is that this is the largest viewed event in the United States annually. It has about 110 million viewers, which is practically half of our population. So to see those numbers fall is quite significant. And you know what? There was a film that came out recently about the head injuries and concussions that players are dealing with. And there was one yesterday, and they refused to call it a concussion. I think it was in the second quarter, but this running back, or I'm not sure of his position. Anyway, he caught the ball, and then he was just hit so hard, and he was taken off. And you know, that's actually why I stopped watching football. I can't support watching these men just get, you know, torn apart, and then they just get fired, and but the rest of their lives are really, really damaged.
Let's talk about pop star Justin Timberlake, another person whose career I confess to not having followed except when he appears in the news. And so he was, you know, famously sort of part of the wardrobe malfunction. Was it something like 8 years ago that Janet Jackson and him in a routine, he essentially pulled off her top, briefly exposing a part of her breast. And then it became a huge controversy, but she was the one who took most of the political flack around that. And, you know, there were a lot of hashtag justice for Janet themes floating around on the internet. But Justin Timberlake now got into trouble over the legacy of another Black pop star, and that was that of Prince. What was his performance on Super Bowl Sunday about, and why are people upset about his attempt to portray Prince in a hologram that he then sort of decided against later?
Yeah, so the performance with Janet Jackson was 14 years ago. It was termed Nipplegate because in the very last second, he somehow touched her breast and exposed it. And then he didn't apologize publicly. He didn't come to her defense publicly. And she was kind of coined the pop culture Jezebel. She was supposed to speak at the Grammys the next week. They made her back out. She was supposed to have a lead role in a film, and they made her back out of that as well. So people say that it really, really brutally hurt her career, whereas he just kind of continued to climb. So this time, again, you know, we're seeing him kind of capitalize off of a Black artist. So he did a medley, as they usually do in Super Bowls, I don't know, maybe 6 to 8 songs. And one of them, he sat down at a big white piano. It was very beautiful on the stage. No one else was there at that time because he had lots of dancers and other scenes. And he said, "Minneapolis, this is for you."
Which was, Prince, of course, Prince's hometown.
Of course, he was beloved there.
An artist whose career I did follow.
Okay. So he passed away in 2016. So now we're a year and a half later or something like that. But it is in Minneapolis, his hometown, right? And so, oh gosh, Sheila E. had met with Justin Timberlake on Saturday.
Sheila Easton, right?
Yeah, she was a great friend of Prince, and said and brought to his attention that Prince was very against these type of like jam sessions of deceased artists with live artists, which are kind of happening now more. For example,
and I didn't know this was a thing, but apparently it's a thing where deceased artists are coming back as holograms.
Oof. Yeah. I mean, one famous one was like Natalie Cole singing with her dad, Nat King Cole. So that one's kind of like heart invoking, and they had a relationship, you know, they probably sang together their whole lives. But this one, apparently Justin and Prince weren't friends, that it's kind of known that they didn't get along. So anyway, Prince was interviewed, I don't know, several years ago for a guitar magazine, and he said that he was against that. He considered it demonic, and he was a very Christian guy or religious guy. So she was like, hey, don't do a hologram in case you're thinking of doing one. And he's like, no, we're not doing one. And then the performance comes, and they have this big white sheet, and they basically displayed his picture, and Prince is playing, and then Justin plays the piano. So they end up having a duet. And I don't know, one of the worst parts, I mean, that's bad enough, is like he's singing the song, I Would Die For You. I mean, it's just so awful in so many ways.
Not appropriate.
Yeah, well said. And so then they do like on TV, what they did was they showed the dome where it was, and they kind of showed the whole city purple, and then the Prince symbol over the dome. But really, if they wanted to do a tribute to Prince, which would be appropriate in Minneapolis, they should have done the whole thing as a tribute to Prince and had lots of artists who were close to him singing his songs. But the way they did it was just kind of thrown in the middle of Justin Timberlake's music. And he ends up like capitalizing off the back of Black Bodies. And it's well documented that he has not come forward to actually speak on behalf of Black Lives Matters. So, you know, there was
He has also been, people have accused Justin Timberlake of appropriating Black culture in his music, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's very clear. And he's not the only one, okay? The system is set up this way that they put together a white boy band because, you know, music executives can make money off of that. But really, lots of the beats and the inspirations are coming from Black artists. But that doesn't get him off the hook. I'm just saying it is a systemic problem. There was a great piece that Cosmo published in June 2016 by the writer Kendra James. And she talked about the way he has made a career of appropriating off of Black culture. So we really shouldn't be surprised, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't sting or that it's actually okay.
Now, the ads are the next part of the Super Bowl that are worth talking about. Ad placements are hugely expensive, perhaps the most expensive of any sporting event. Companies will usually create ads specifically for the Super Bowl because they can guarantee such a high viewership. They're often funny in and of themselves. They have this high production value. Last year's Super Bowl had ads that were quite political. This year, as far as I can tell, no ad was overtly political. But what we did see was one let's just say again, not appropriate use of a Black icon's words. And in this case, the truck commercial that used an MLK speech. In fact, let's just play that for our audience. We'll just hear a brief part of this. This is an MLK speech that is being used to sell trucks at the Super Bowl.
If you want to be important, wonderful. If you want to be recognized, wonderful. If you want to be great, wonderful. But recognize that he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. That's a new definition of greatness. By giving that definition of greatness, it means that everybody can be great. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know.
And that's the voice of Martin Luther King Jr. Offering the narrative over some syrupy images of Americans that include military personnel, doctors, nurses, and others, and occasionally some video of a giant gas-guzzling truck thrown in. Stephanie, I almost vomited watching this ad.
So no, they received a lot of bad bad press on Twitter, on lots of people are tearing this commercial apart. Now, they did get approval from the MLK. I don't know what do you call it?
The family, right.
Yeah, the foundation the trust, or something like that, that they felt that it, you know, kind of helped his legacy or something like this. Now, what is so ironic about this, and not a lot of people are talking about it, is that speech. So that speech was given 50 years ago to the day of the Super Bowl. It actually is very anti-capitalist. Mm. So they pulled out, this is like MLK's legacy, unfortunately, they pulled out like the nicest, I think you called it syrupy sentiment, and they really took out all of his real political stuff where he was really pushing to change things. He was pushing to change the capitalist nature of this country that puts profit over people. He even calls out advertisers and car advertising in that very speech.
Oh, wow. Really?
I'm not kidding you. Yes. It's like, it's kind of, I mean, if I taught marketing, I might use this as a prime example of like what you do. You pull out what serves your product and just, you know, do away with the rest of it. It's really, really amazing. So yeah, it was quite inappropriate. Lots of people on Twitter were like, oh, okay, MLK wants to sell Dodge trucks now? Like, no. So there's a balancing act, right? You know, they're trying to do something kind of progressive or something, but it really, really, like, they didn't get it. So some people are saying that's why advertisers took this kind of apolitical stance, because they didn't want it to backfire. But I think really this talking about going back to the idea of Justin Timberlake too is like, and taking a knee, you know, I feel like the Super Bowl really is an example of pop culture, and pop culture is a really interesting view into current politics and culture, right? So we're more comfortable with the civil rights legacy and Black people's struggles back then what is actually happening right now. And so that's why you can have Dodge have an MLK speech in their commercial, but they won't show the current players on the field raising a fist or taking a knee.
Hmm. Well, Stephanie, any other issues are of any other ads that you'd like to point out? I know the avocados from Mexico ad, a sort of Hunger Games style bizarre ad, also made some waves. I'm not sure if there's any politics there.
You know, I think this is a really, really interesting commercial. It actually got number one in terms of Twitter hashtags. And I think this is an example of where you can read something with a progressive view, or you can just kind of see it as like, wow, that's really weird. Let's make that trendy. So what happens in this commercial, I think it's pretty brilliant, actually. It's a great criticism of U.S. privilege and also hipster culture. So they're in a dome and it's clear. They can see out and everybody's wearing white. It's kind of multi-culti. So there's people of various racial backgrounds there. And the leader, who's this white woman, says like, see, we're good here. We're safe. We have everything we need inside. We have all the avocados we want. And then this woman just like realizes the chips are outside, right? So if you're thinking about the dome as the wall and the chips representing Mexicans or Latinos or anyone else that, you know, the current administration is trying to get out of our country, everyone freaks out because they're like, we need the chips. They can't live without the chips.
You can't have the guacamole without the chips. So we have the avocados in the United States, but we're trying to keep the Mexicans that grow the avocados, their, you know, fellow Mexicans out.
Yeah, it's really wild.
I mean, do you think that the ad maker intended for that symbolism?
I don't know. And then, I mean, the product itself is called Avocados from Mexico.
Right.
So, you know, it's just really interesting. And then the lady says, no, look, you can have avocados with many things. And she has like a buffet. And then she pulls up, look, with toast. And avocado toast is like the hipster food right now. I think I saw a sign once on Instagram that said, please don't feed the hipsters avocado toast. So it's like a definite, like,
A dig.
Criticism. Yeah. And then, so they calm down for a second, but then they realize they don't have Wi-Fi. So then they go wild. So I think it's a really interesting, I like reading it as like, look what USers can't function without.
First world problems. Is that a
way
to put it?
Exactly. Without having everything at their fingertips, you know? But it's interesting because I guess you can do a very mainstream, I'm pretty sure not everyone is reading it that way. You can do a very mainstream read of it. So Guac Nation, I think, is what was trending last night. And what's interesting is, like, I think they may have planted what are called brand ambassadors. So that's people who have, like, thousand, maybe 10,000 or 100,000 followers on Twitter, and they tweet something and then they hashtag it. And they may be being paid on the back end by avocados from Mexico, but it just looks like they're really into it. So I'm not sure if they spent, my hunch is they spent a bunch of money on that too, to be number one, but it was definitely paid off for them.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Stephanie, for joining us today, and I'm sure we'll have you back on again in the future. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks, Sonali.
Stephanie Abraham is a writer and media critic. She is also the pop culture correspondent and film critic for our program. We've been discussing the politics of Super Bowl 2018. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.